Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm okay, Justin. How are you?
I'm all right.
We have a Patreon update. Our new premium episode that Justin chose has been recorded, and it's, I'd say, ready for release. So any day now, it will be popping up on Patreon, and then sometime after that on iTunes and our website at genypod.com.
Yeah, but instead of going through the whole purchase process, it's pretty easy to subscribe to Patreon and grab some stuff and check it out. There's a lot of episodes out there. Tonight's case is a mysterious death that happened in the military. We send our sons and daughters off to fight for our freedoms, fight in wars, to get money for college, to become a better, more mature adult. But sometimes the military is a little bit questionable, and I think this case definitely speaks to that. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight concerns the mysterious death of Lavina Johnson, a 19-year-old who had gone off to Iraq to help alleviate her parents of having to pay for both their daughters to go to college. She said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it on my own." And that way her younger sister could have her college paid for by her parents. It's not really a stretch here because her father was in the military.
There was a lot of military background in her family. Every member of her family is highly educated. They're lawyers, they're doctors, they're into criminal justice. So very diverse.
Lavina Johnson was born July 27th, 1985. Her parents, Dr. John Johnson and Linda Johnson. She was the 4th of 5 children. And the first of the 2 girls. They grew up in Florissant, Missouri, which is by St. Louis. In school, she excelled, also playing the violin, and participated in junior high school concerts. So very active in her school. She was regularly on the honor roll through her years, and even won the Teacher's Choice Award in recognition of outstanding effort for the 2002-2003 school year at Hazelwood Central High. She was named to the Hawks Sigma Cum Laude Club at her high school and often described by friends and others as sweet and helpful. She graduated in 2004. her choice to go into the military happened, I would say, after high school, right, Justin? I mean, for her to be sent to Iraq in 2005, maybe you can shed light on how this process works since you were in the military.
I don't know what she did, but when I went, I did a split op program. So I actually went to my basic training between my junior and senior year. And then I went to my advanced training or MOS training right after my senior year. And most advanced training, at least the ones that were offered to me, were 6 months to a year long. Now I know in a time of war, they can kind of speed things up a bit, but for her to go from high school to being deployed overseas in a year, I'm guesstimating she did the same thing I did. And she went through her basic training maybe, during her junior and senior year, but that's just me guessing because we're not too sure. Maybe her MOS was pretty short as far as the training length went. And she got out there right out of high school.
Yeah, I would say the deployment for her was probably going to be about 6 months because her favorite holiday was Christmas. And in one of her later phone calls while she was in Iraq, she told her mother, "Don't decorate the tree without me." So she was planning on being home for Christmas. As far as her interests go, she really wanted to attend college. This is what drove her to get into the military, I believe, to help pay for college. And she wanted to go on to become a movie producer. And she said that she wanted to make her father's books into movies. She also wanted to get involved in music. Now, I don't know how her family felt about her going into the military. Again, they're not strangers to the military, but this is their daughter. And I think they, at least from what I understand, they just thought she would go on to college. And then when she made the choice to go into the Army, she was the kind of person that when she'd made up her mind, she was going to follow through with it. So there's no doubting Lavina's intentions here. She was going into the military. And I bet had she gotten through the military and gone on to college, I could see her going on to becoming a movie producer.
Yeah. Her father was initially against her joining, but he felt that she'd already made up her mind. And if you ever watch an interview with the man, he gives a lot of opinions out there. And he's not a big fan of recruiters going into high schools to recruit children in his mind, because they will promise a lot of things that they will never deliver on. And he felt that his daughter had fallen for some of the over-promising and under-delivering that an Army or any military recruiter might do. And I'm not trying to be disparaging, but being that I was told a lot of things when I joined that never came to fruition. So that's just part of the game, and it's actually an inside joke of what your recruiter will tell you. So not trying to be disparaging again, that's common knowledge. And one thing that I will say that her father did know is he had saved up money for his daughter to go to college, and she didn't want to burden him with that. So she felt that she was going to get money from the military to go to college, and they do have a GI Bill. They do assist.
So she is deployed and she ends up in Iraq in May of 2005. And this is at the joint base in Balad.
Lavina's first letter home, she is kind of proud at first. She says that they call them female warriors. Then they start to refer to them as females. Then they start referring to them as soul, which is half of the word soldier, which is more or less a derogatory term. I don't know if this was ultimately used against all female soldiers or if it was used against anyone that was a newbie, but the way she writes it, it's how the females are referred to in her company. Another thing that she writes about is how she packed all this stuff to go into the military, and when she got there, she had to dump it all out. And then she had to go rebuy all that stuff at the local PX. And I remember this happening to me. I remember my mom actually scraping together extra money to purchase toiletries and other items for me just to have to throw it out once I got there. So it was little things like that. They're rude awakenings. She's writing home and asking her parents to send her soap and send her money because her ATM card, she can't remember the PIN on it, and she needs soap. Another thing that they don't tell you in the military is you have to pay for that haircut, that horrible shave cut. Yeah, that costs $5. So she brags about flying first class to Iraq when she gets deployed. She's determined to only spend her money on the necessities, only things that she needs, because she's now figured out that all that money for college is really how well she saves her money that she's paid. Little things like that, that I'm seeing her living through that I experienced myself.
Lavina obviously loved her family because she would write home regularly. And because of where she was stationed, she was in communications. So she had access to a phone and she had access to send letters whenever she wanted. It sounded like just a better position to be in, I suppose, to stay in touch with family. And she describes what it's like out there in Iraq, saying it's really hot during the day, but at night it's beautiful. Because she's sending letters home, you can actually get a sense of how she's feeling about being deployed there. The letters, I think, are descriptive enough to infer that she's doing what she wants to do, right, Justin?
Yeah. She has minor gripes, but for the most part, she's very positive. She seems to be enjoying herself. She's enjoying her service. She even talks about 3 hot days of training, wearing a bulletproof vest, which that thing's heavy, and having to ride around on trucks, having to be out in the hot sun, feeling like she was going to faint or pass out. They had to sleep in tents that night, and she was one of the few people that brought her cot along, which that's just extra weight. But at night, that sure pays off because other people have to sleep on the floor, and you could Google the scorpions and the What's the spider, the camel spider, and they're, you don't want to sleep on the floor. She sees camels for the first time. It's pretty fun. There's a lot of positive things in there. But then she'll talk about how while they're doing a firing drill, the spent casings from the, you know, M16 or the M60s that they're shooting, the hot shells will hit her in the face and burn her, things like that. But she's not saying, I hate this, I want to come home. She's just discussing these things that are happening. These are just everyday average things for anyone in the military.
On May 27th, she sent a letter home to wish her dad a happy birthday. She said, try to relax on the day your presence is celebrated, even though you should be celebrated every day. So a lovely letter to her dad, I would say.
Yeah.
I said she worked in communications. One of her duties is to open and close the communication center. So she's got to open it. And then at night, she's got to ask everyone to leave. And then she closes up.
And that's the same job I had. I was a 74 Charlie, which was telecommunications before they got computers and other things that they would use. And there were communication centers that you would work at. You would have to manage the systems, you'd have to manage the intel that was coming in and out. And then you would have to pull security too on who was allowed to come in and who was allowed to view what messages and what intel.
But in July, her father, Dr. Johnson, gets the sense that things aren't the way they ought to be, at least in his mind. There was an incident where she was closing the communications center and she asked the soldiers that were in there to leave. But they didn't want to leave, and they wouldn't.
And they get to call home from here. So a lot of them want to make phone calls or do things like that. So, of course, they don't want to leave, right?
Well, a general shows up, and he orders all of the soldiers out. And then he takes Lavina aside and informs her that the reason they didn't leave when they were asked to is because her voice was too soft. Now, she talked to her dad on July 14th about this. This had occurred on July 13th. When she told her father about this, he said, you need to go to your company commander and tell him to assign you a battle buddy. Now, Lavina didn't feel comfortable telling a superior officer what to do, but her father was pretty insistent on this. A battle buddy is a person that is assigned to you, or maybe you've met them already and you already have something of a relationship, a friendship with them. If you have a battle buddy, it eases your transition into military life. It helps with, you know, you can educate each other when you learn things. You can keep an eye on each other. It's also a safety thing. I don't know if you know much about battle buddies, Justin.
Well, when you're in basic training and advanced training, you have your bunk mate because you're sleeping in bunks. But that term morphs into battle buddy, which is your bud, the person that you're close with. It's not exactly an official thing. It's more or less an unsaid thing that you have a battle buddy. You have somebody, and I had mine. His name was Alma. We didn't call each other by our last names. We called each other by our first names. So Alma, if you're listening, here you go. And we would look out for each other. And if either one of us was in trouble, the other one would come to our aid. If somebody was, you know, if the drill sergeant was going to the room and I knew his stuff was left out, I'd run in the room and go put it away real quick so he wouldn't get in trouble. Things like that.
Well, what I got out of Dr. Johnson's comments were simply that he was starting to feel a little nervous about Lavina being in Iraq.
Absolutely. And if she didn't have a battle buddy, then she's by herself in a foreign land surrounded by strangers.
On July 17th of 2005, Lavina calls home and she said she's going to be home earlier than planned, possibly. So her mom, her family, they're all getting really excited. They can't wait to have Lavina back home and celebrate Christmas. And Lavina said, "Don't decorate the Christmas tree without me." From what I understand, you could hear the excitement in her voice. She was very much looking forward to spending the holiday with her family.
And it's just a day later that some soldiers will come to her room and try to pick her up for class, right?
But they didn't get an answer and they left without her. At 10, she still hadn't shown up, so they reported her missing. If a soldier goes missing, well, either way you look at it, either there's concern or she's expected to be, it's, you know, somewhere, so they will try to track her down. Unfortunately, on July 19th, at 1:20 in the morning there, Lavina is found in a tent.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Her body's found in a KBR tent, which stands for Kellogg, Brown, and Root, which is a contractor's tent. When we deploy to other countries, it's not just a military endeavor. There are lots of private companies. Most of you have probably heard of Halliburton. I used to work for a company called AECOM, which did a lot of military contracts. So this is KBR, and she's found laying in a pool of blood.
Now, soldiers are not supposed to go into these contractors' tents. So for her to be there is very strange. Now, back at home in Missouri, her family is visited by a soldier. And wasn't it her mother that looks out the window and sees a soldier and calls out for her husband?
Yeah. She pretty much knows what it means, but she wants to ask her husband, what's going on here? Because they don't show up at your door and knock for nothing. They're not just going to come pay you a pleasant visit. So I think she's a little bit trying to deny what's about to happen. Her husband knows, and he's very quick-witted, so he's listening intently to what this soldier says.
He makes sure that both her parents are present before he informs them that their daughter, Lavina Lynn Johnson, is dead.
The soldier alludes to something that triggers her father to say, "Are you insinuating that my daughter took her life?" And the soldier said, no, I'm just saying that it's under investigation. But I think that he was insinuating that it was a suicide. But when he upset her father with this, he backed off from it. The next day, the casualty liaison, who's the military person who comes out and takes care of all the funeral arrangements, all of the military funeral stuff, he recommends to the family to have a closed casket and informs her father that it appears her face might not be intact.
So this, of course, upsets Dr. Johnson. He's wondering, if his daughter did take her own life, why would her face be all messed up? And it just doesn't sit right with him. But here's this casualty liaison telling him, I would recommend a closed casket. And I think that's the moment where this isn't simply they need to get their daughter home and bury her. This is now we need to get to the bottom of what happened.
They're not given any information. They're just told she took her life and here's her body and we will go through the motions of the funeral and we're done. They do have an open casket funeral, regardless of what the Army told them to do. And her father takes a good look at his daughter, and he sees that her nose has been fixed, pretty much plastic surgery. So he thinks, well, it probably was broken.
Well, and also, if for those of you willing to look at the picture of her in the casket, you can tell there's something wrong with her nose. There's a bump that's on her nose that wasn't there before, because we have pictures of her before she went to Iraq.
He notices that there's something wrong with her lips, and then he finds a bullet hole on her left side of her head, but it's right beyond her hairline. So it's, I would call that the left front of her head. And he thinks that's very suspicious. Now, something comes up with the gloves. The funeral director is noticing that her father is taking interest in a lot of details of his daughter's body, and they will have a discussion, and it will come out that her gloves have been glued onto her hands. And her father says, is that normal? You know, because she's in her dress uniform, her Class A, and so she has white gloves on. But he didn't think much about it when he was looking at her. But now that he knows that the gloves are glued on, he tries to pull one off and it won't come off. It's really glued on. So he thinks there's something wrong with her hands that they don't want me to see. If you can't tell at this point, her father is 100%. There's something wrong with this situation. I don't feel comfortable about this. I don't feel like they're telling me anything. And why would her gloves be glued onto her hands?
Before they sent Lavina home,
they performed an autopsy on her. What do we know about the Army's findings after performing this autopsy?
Well, the autopsy was performed with the idea that this was a suicide. It was not performed as if it was a homicide because they did not do a rape kit. They did not scrape under her fingernails. They didn't look at anything like that. When you read the report of the tent, it's poorly written would be an understatement, but the autopsy it leaves out so much. And the report from the tent is even more ridiculous. And right there, I'm my spidey sense is going off like, what's going on? Like, okay, this isn't gelling here. In the autopsy report, they don't mention her teeth, but her teeth have been, I don't know if I would say bashed in, but they've been struck with something. So that doesn't really add up. The report that the military wrote up when they found her body talks about matches and an aerosol can that was found, but there's no matches found. She had a lighter on her, but no matches. So it's like, how do they get that wrong? There's photos of the lighter. There's no photos of the matches.
Okay, so this doesn't sound right already, but let's talk about the M16.
Yeah, there's a photo that you guys can look at online. It is morbid and disturbing, but it shows her laying on the ground on her back, and her right arm is sort of draped over her face. She's lying flat on her back, and she's in a pool of blood. There's a cot to her left, and on the other side of that cot is an M16, the one that's alleged that she used to shoot herself with.
And it's just alongside the cot.
It's on the other side of the cot.
It looks like someone placed it there.
Yeah.
Exactly next to the cot.
Now, we're just going to go with if she shot herself, she would have either been sitting on the right side of the cot with the M16 with the butt into the ground and the barrel in her mouth, and she would have fallen back. And that M16 would have fallen probably to her feet or to her side. If she was standing in front of the cot and leaned over and did this, again, the M16 would have fallen next to her. The fact that the M16 is several feet away on the other side of this cot makes no sense whatsoever in any stretch of the imagination. So if she had shot herself, somebody's moved the M16. It did not fall naturally there.
Well, the report says that the M16 was found next to her, but is next to her several feet away?
Yeah. Again, this is the report, which obviously was written by a grunt or somebody, because it's really bad. They don't get half of the stuff right. They talk about, I guess, non-descriptive things, but they leave out a lot of stuff, such as there's a pool of blood under her head, but there's also blood pooling to the side of her that's totally disconnected from the pool of blood under her head, which is obviously where all the blood went. But the blood to the side of her, and it's not blood spatter, it's like she was leaning over, bleeding that way before she fell back. So there's two different areas of blood that they don't even mention in the report. They don't mention her broken nose. Just from this alone, I'm having a hard time believing any of it. But we find out that she most likely had a broken nose. Her lower jaw was split. She had a broken cheekbone. Her molars had bit into her top lip. She also had a broken neck and dislocated shoulder. I don't know how you get that from shooting yourself in the head. I don't know if you could fall and do that much damage to yourself. I'm not buying it. Her left eye was sunken in. This possibly could have been from the bullet traveling through her head. And then there was two big cuts around her mouth. And there was a shell casing underneath her right leg. And then her father says, "What is that bullet hole in the top of her head?" And they say, "That's the exit wound." She had the barrel of the gun in her mouth. We assume an entrance wound into her mouth and an exit wound out the top of her head. Now, the exit wound on the top of her head is about the size of a 9mm pistol caliber. It's larger than an M16 or a 5.56. So a 5.56 round is much smaller, and this hole's a little bit bigger, but her father expects the hole to be a lot bigger because an exit wound, the bullet goes in and makes a hole the size of the bullet, and it comes out with a big old hole because it expands, tumbles inside the human body. And when it comes out of the body, it can leave a lot of tissue damage. So this perfect hole on the top of her head, her father's questioning, is this the entrance wound or the exit wound? Because it looks like an entrance wound. Because if she shot herself in the mouth, then this bullet has to go through her jawbone and then out the skull. And it made a perfect hole. So he's really questioning this.
Now, in August of that year, there's a real push to get information from the military by the Johnson family. The medical examiner, Ed Reedy, spoke with them. And when he was asked why no rape test was administered, he replied that there was no sign of a struggle. About almost 2 weeks later, her father talked to the casualty liaison, who told him that the evidence is so messed up, it will take a year to get it worked out. That's pretty alarming, I would say. They're saying that there's no sign of a struggle, that this is labeled a suicide, but they're saying there's a lot of messed up evidence. Again, this isn't helping the family reach the same conclusion.
No. When you look at some of the photos and you listen to the family talk about this, they'll suggest that there were drag marks, meaning her body might have been dragged there. I have a problem with the blood that's pulled up beside her, because I'm thinking, was somebody carrying her and that was where the blood hit the ground and then they laid her down? Were they dragging her with a tarp or something? I don't know. There's a lot of different theories that you could come up with. But again, the reports are terrible, and they're not going to give anybody a warm and fuzzy about what had happened that night. Her timeline that night is even questionable. She tells her family that she normally gets off at around 4 or 5 o'clock. And after that, she's supposed to go to PT or physical training, and she goes back to her barracks. She gets into her PT uniform, which is the gray army shirt that you're used to seeing, gray sweatpants, tennis shoes, and then she's wearing a reflective belt. And that's just standard because there's big tanks and equipment that's driving around. You know, you don't want to get run over. But she doesn't show up to PT. Later on, the army will come back and say that she went to a male soldier's room and hung out with him for a good 4 hours. And then they left and went to the PX and were shopping and doing whatever there for another hour. So let's just say she got off work at around 4. Then she's with this guy for 4 hours, 8 o'clock. They go to the PX. It's 9 o'clock, maybe 10. And then he says that he walks her back to her barracks. And then he goes home or goes back to his room. And so this happened sometime after 10 p.m. at night. She never made it to PT and nobody was looking for her. It's a little odd. Maybe they knew where she was, but she failed to show up to PT and she was dressed for it.
September of 2005, the casualty liaison gave the family the copy of the autopsy. They're not getting everything. This is just one thing that they wanted. They want everything that they can get. They visit a criminal investigator. They tell him everything they know, and then that investigator says that they'll do what they can to find out what happened to Lavina. Dr. Johnson files a Freedom of Information Act. He wants the military to give him what they have. He wants to know what happened. It's not enough to just hear it from them. He needs to see it for himself, and I can't imagine having to do that, because if he's successful, he will be getting all kinds of information about his daughter, who is now deceased.
Which, why wouldn't they just give him this in general if he asked? I know it's the military, it's our American government, but there wasn't any national secrets that she was keeping. There's no reason for them to be so secretive about this. If indeed it was a suicide and she shot herself, there it is. It's not like she was fighting with the enemy in some place that America shouldn't have been in or something like that. The Army's not playing ball with the family. So they submit these Freedom of Information Acts, and they have to submit a lot of them to get this paperwork. And what they end up getting are black and white Xerox copies of photos and the reports and the poorest quality you could ever imagine. The family, of course, thinks that this is intentional. There's a Xerox copy piece of paper of a CD-ROM. Okay. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, but I marched along next to a soldier who put his boots on the wrong feet and walked for 3 miles before he noticed. So there's not a lot of, you know, common sense with some people. But they see this CD-ROM and it's like labeled photos and documents from this case. And they're like, we want that CD-ROM. They don't give it to them because they're like, well, you already got a copy of it. Meaning they put it on a copy machine and, you know, Xeroxed it and then sent it back to them. Like, that's the level that we're working with here. So they're kind of done with the Army at this point. They're done with the runarounds that they've been getting. So they start going back channels, right?
Right. 2007, they finally made some good contacts within the government. Congressman Lacey Clay, who's part of the Governmental Reform Committee, starts to talk about Lavina's case. He's able to get the CD to the family.
But hold on. They have a whole congressional hearing with the Army generals and the senators. And the Army generals are saying, yeah, just send us over the request, the Freedom of Information request, and we'll process it. Like, they won't just send it. They will force you to go through this process. And then after the hearing, the general actually tells Clay that family's not entitled to anything, especially that CD. So Clay and the other senators say, yes, they are, and you need to send it to them.
I think the only reason that Clay was able to get this CD was that he appeared on C-SPAN with Brigadier General Rodney Johnson. No relation. Rodney Johnson is, I guess, because he's on television here, he's sort of forced into agreeing to give this CD over to the family, right?
Yeah, because he had no intention of handing it over, but on camera, he acts like it.
Of course, Rodney Johnson, this brigadier general, then says no. So even though he agreed to do it on TV, now later he's saying no. So Lacey Clay will then, with the assistance of the Governmental Reform Committee, will order the Army to give that CD over to the family. And meanwhile, her father, Dr. John Johnson, is hitting the media. He's doing interviews. He's appearing on TV and in papers. And he's getting his daughter's story out to the public.
In his mind, the gloves are off. Like, you've pushed me to the point where I no longer care for the pleasantries of let's make this happen. He's saying, no, I'm going to go after you guys. And they get this CD, and it has full color pictures and photos of his daughter. And he sees all the things that we've spoken about, the broken nose, jaw, the molars, and cut marks on her face. But he wants to see all the photos of his daughter, including the ones of her genitals. And they find out that she has been mutilated down there.
Again, the military had said that there was no evidence of any struggle, and so they didn't need to do a rape kit. This wasn't an assault. But now that he's seeing these pictures, it very much appears that his daughter has been assaulted. She's been attacked, and now he's wondering if she's been raped. And he even takes some of these photos and shows them to his brother, who is involved in forensics. And his brother says that he thinks there's evidence that there was Wundstat used in her. And Wundstat is something that if you're on the battlefield and you get a bad wound, you can put this into the wound and it'll harden and it'll stop the bleeding. The only way to remove it is to cut it out. Now, this is important because the Johnson family's concerns, they asked that the body of their daughter, Lavina, be exhumed so that another autopsy can be performed on it.
From the photos, her father says that it appeared that somebody had poured chemicals down there. But after the autopsy, it becomes apparent that there was a lot more than just a burn, a chemical burn down there. They also find that her leg, her thigh, had been burned pretty badly, and her clothing was on. So he's now inferring, like, okay, how did she get these wounds on her legs and on her thighs with her clothing on? She had to have been disrobed and then hurt and then the clothing put back on her, because it doesn't make any sense to have burns on her thighs that her sweatpants are in completely intact.
Now, the media has definitely gotten interested in this case. CBS actually pays for an autopsy to be performed on Lavina, and then the family pays for another autopsy to be performed by another forensic pathologist. So two autopsies. Both of the autopsies resulted in inconclusive result. They don't know, they can't say, which I find kind of surprising, because the autopsy is much more complete here. These autopsies that were performed independently are much more complete than the original military autopsy, because now they know she had suffered all kinds of trauma that was never mentioned in the original autopsy. One thing that really stood out to me, the second autopsy found that Lavina was missing parts of her tongue. She was also missing part of her vagina and her anus. Now, again, I had said earlier that Dr. Johnson's brother took a look and thought that there was something in her and that he thought it very well could be wound stat. Now, the only way to get it out is to cut it out. So that would explain maybe why she was missing parts of her vagina and her anus. Her tongue, having part of her tongue missing, well, the theory is that because the wound to her head, the military said it was an exit wound on the top of her head. Well, others are suggesting that that was actually an entrance wound from a 9mm bullet. The bullet would have traveled down and probably lodged in her tongue. If they cut out the part of the tongue with the bullet in it, now there's no questioning their findings, right? Because that would throw the suicide finding right out the window.
Exactly. And that's where there's not a lot of information about which hole is the entrance and which hole is the exit. Her jaw is split. If part of her tongue is missing, then that means there's a lot of trauma to the inside of her mouth, which would side more that that was the exit wound, was inside of her mouth, and the entrance wound was on top of her head. As we know, typically the exit wound is bigger than the entrance wound, but pulling the trigger of an M16 with the muzzle, with the end of the barrel in your mouth, there's a lot of gas that's expelled there, and it could cause a lot of traumatic injuries inside of the mouth also. But is it going to cause a split jaw and a broken nose and your teeth to be pushed in or knocked in? Well, the teeth being pushed in makes sense if the barrel was outside of her mouth and the bullet, you know, push these things in. But if you look at the angle, it appears that the barrel had to be inside of her mouth in order to travel in that trajectory. So I have a problem with the teeth, and I have a problem with the split jaw, because if that was the entrance wound inside of her mouth, that's not what I would expect to see. But if it's an exit wound, that is what I would expect.
So you might think that the original autopsy was completely bogus. There are a lot of things missing from it that are revealed later in these other autopsies. But one thing that the family has really harped on was that they didn't find Lavina's prints on the weapon, and they also didn't find any gunpowder residue on her hands.
They also harp on she could not have pulled the trigger because the weapon is too long. She was 5 foot tall. Now, a standard M16 is typically 40 inches long, and it is mostly barrel. you know, most of the barrels are around 20 inches plus a little bit past that. So the trigger is around 26 inches because the butt of the weapon is about 10 inches. So somewhere in between 20 and 30 inches is where that trigger is going to be, in the middle. I think that you can reach that trigger. I don't care if she was 5 foot tall. I think it's possible. Depending on if the weapon was upside down or right side up, though, this shell casing under her right leg, well, now we're looking at a Kurt Cobain situation of why the spent shell was where it was. But regardless, an M16 shoots that shell out. So why would it even be next to her body? It should be on the other side of the tent, to the right or left, depending on how she had oriented the weapon. The rest of the questions here about all the issues with what's going on under the waistline, what is that? That just blows anything that the Army told this family out of the water. And I wouldn't believe a single thing they said to me at that point. I understand her father's frustrations once they do their own autopsies.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
A famous civil rights lawyer gets involved here, not really at the behest of the family. He just is reading about this and becomes intrigued. His name is Donald Watkins. He has come up with a theory on what he believes happened to Lavina. And this is gathering all of the evidence together and trying to put it into a completed puzzle. He said that Lavina, in her own writings, wrote down the name of a general, General Kevin Burns. He's a 4-star general. This is important because she wrote about him, and she also called and talked to her dad about Kevin Burns. But Kevin Burns at the time had been told to stop carrying on an affair with a woman who was not military. She was a citizen. And he apparently didn't listen. According to Donald Watkins, his theory is that when she was out that night, that she came across Kevin Burns and his mistress and was silenced for it, because he could get in big trouble for having this affair that he was told to put an end to.
But he's going to walk around a base with her and kill everybody he comes across? Yeah.
Kevin Burns became the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Commander in November of 2002. So he had been at this base for about 3 years. We could go through all of these possible scenarios if she is indeed coming upon this general having an affair, and how she ends up dead in this tent. But there are some issues here. The military itself has said that the reason why Lavina took her own life is because she got an email from her boyfriend, who she had been dating for months, 2 months probably, right?
Yeah.
She printed off these emails from him and had set fire to them in the tent before ending her own life.
So she printed out the emails, took them with her to the tent, and set them on fire. Now, there's also a wooden bench that's flipped over that appeared to have been sprayed with the aerosol and set on fire. I don't know how the general works into this theory. I disregard that one.
I looked into the general because there is a lot said about him on the internet, because it defies logic that a 4-star general, who at the time was 90 days away from officially retiring, he would be involved in something like this, being relieved of his command. This is what happened to him. The general was relieved of duty in August of 2005, even though he was set to retire in November of 2005. And so a lot of people are saying, well, wait a minute. Mr. Watkins is making a lot of sense, because why would a four-star general be relieved of his command? It just doesn't make sense. He's the only one in the modern era. Of the 11 four-star generals at the time, he was third in the chain of command. So what else would it be except a cover-up, right? Well, it turns out, according to everyone that I've read from on the internet, and this is on military sites, this is on Facebook, anywhere you go, they just don't believe that a four-star general would be relieved of his command for having an affair. Even more so because at the time, he had been legally separated from his wife when he was seeing this woman, this civilian. So it just didn't make sense that they would take it that far, that they would say, you're relieved of your command. The more I read on it, the more I found out that this General Burns did not get along with Donald Rumsfeld, who was the Secretary of Defense at the time. So I think, at least in my opinion, this isn't something that works. I don't believe this theory that General Burns was interrupted by Lavina Johnson and then he had to silence her and kill her. I don't buy it. I know that theory's out there, and it's actually a very popular one because Donald Watkins came up with it. As far as the military stating that she took her own life because of her boyfriend breaking up with her, remember, she wrote and called home a lot, and her family never got the sense that there was anything wrong. Sure, there were spiders, there were scorpions. Sometimes she felt like she wasn't just one of the soldiers, but there was no indication that a breakup like this would be so detrimental to her mental health that she wouldn't be able to continue on. And I don't know about you, Justin, but this is another theory that just doesn't work for me, that she would get this breakup email. I mean, if she was so serious about this guy, maybe she wouldn't have left for Iraq.
That's it. And her family will swear up and down that she was happy and that her daughter would never do something like this. They go immediately to foul play. I look at the boyfriend of 2 months. I think, well, that could be hard on somebody. I also know that people can appear happy and not give a lot of signs before taking their own life. That absolutely is a thing. But with Lavina, it's a lot harder to buy. And her family didn't notice. Also, we have that soldier that she was with allegedly for 4 hours before this happened, or up to 6 hours, really. He didn't notice anything.
No investigation.
But the Army will start giving the family a lot of explanations for this suicide theory. They say that her behavior changed and that she was eating a lot of ice cream. She started smoking and that she was treated for an STD earlier that year. Now, I don't care if somebody eats ice cream. That doesn't dictate anything to me. I don't know if she actually did take up smoking, why that would be considered odd behavior, because when you're in the military, a lot of people smoke. That's just a thing. Now, the STD from a year prior, that one's odd because it's claimed that she went in to be treated for this. She was given medications or prescriptions for medications, but she never filled them. She never took the treatment, which I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense. And did she tell her boyfriend if she had this STD? Because she'd only been with him for 2 months, and then she had been treated, or not treated, but had gone in for treatment that she refused, I guess, earlier. That doesn't really add up. And again, when the report for the crime scene is so bungled and so poorly written, I can't really believe ice cream eating, smoking, STD, all those reports, I'm calling into question now. I can't really buy into all of them, and I'm not a conspiracy kind of guy. But if she did take her own life, Aaron, how do you see this going down?
Yeah, a person's state of mind is very difficult to understand, and we don't know what goes through a person's mind from one moment to the next. This is a young woman who was 19, almost 20 at the time, who was very far away from her family, thousands and thousands of miles away. And she's around people she doesn't know. It's a whole new culture, a whole new way of life. And she wrote about how she'd have to get up at 3 a.m. without anything to eat. She'd have to go right into training. We don't understand how that impacts one person to the next. So deep down, I think there are possibilities here for her being very upset, not being comfortable. The problem I'm having with that is that it seems like they're trying too hard to paint that picture for us. The military wasn't showing the family anything, and yet they tried really hard to show that, yeah, she's not acting like herself and she's acting weird, and she was very, very upset.
But this is all after the fact. This is when the family starts pressing. Let's describe the scene here. We have this contractor tent and we have this wooden bench outside. What else is outside of the tent?
Well, in the pictures, apparently you can see that there is blood leading from somewhere beyond the tent to the tent.
That wouldn't make any sense.
It wouldn't make any sense if you're trying to fit everything into this theory of suicide.
So the bench is outside. We have possible drag marks or blood leading to the tent. And the bench has been set on fire. We have an aerosol can. We have a lighter. We have a spent shell casing. And then we have her in the tent with the M16 on the other side of the cot. The only theory I can come up with of her taking her own life is if she was attacked and tortured for a long time, and this was her only way out. That's the only suicide theory I have here. And I know the family doesn't agree with this, but I think ballistics and bullets can do weird things. I think she probably could have stuck the barrel in her mouth and pulled the trigger, and it's possible that the bullet came out the top of her head, and it's not enough room for it to have expanded or tumbled or anything. So it's possible that it went clean through. That's it. That's all I have for the suicide angle. Everything else at that crime scene doesn't fit suicide. I mean, was she bashing her face on the bench and lighting herself on fire? She took off all her clothes, lit herself on fire. And then when that didn't work, she put her clothes back on and went in the tent and pulled the trigger. And somehow she did this like while standing and then stumbled, bleeding onto the ground before she fell back onto her back and tossed the M16 into the air so it fell on the other side of the cot. I think the scene's been manipulated. And that right there, the location of the M16, the location of the blood, I don't buy it.
An independent investigative research group, the Cold Case Research Institute, spent 3 years, and they're headed by Cheryl McCollum. There are students from three different universities, and they recreated the crime scene. They looked at the autopsies. You would think an independent group could figure out whether the military or the Johnson family was correct. They both can't be correct, can they, Justin?
I would say no. I would say that they both can have a lot of details wrong, but this was either a homicide or suicide.
Right, and that's what I'm getting at. Yeah. So if you have access to all this information, and trust me, we tried to get as much as we could. I mean, we went with what was available to us online, which took a little while, but this research group spent 3 years on this. All I can tell you is I'm going to try and remain calm here while I relate their findings.
Just read the statement they put out. That's all you really need to do because it's weird.
July 19th, 2011, the Cold Case Investigative Research Group, which had spent 3 years studying the Lavina Johnson case, came to the conclusion that it's inconclusive. According to Cheryl McCollum, the problem is, number one, the way the notification happened, and the lack of information given to that family fast enough. There was nothing about this case that we could go back to the Army to say, you need to relook at it. We didn't have anything new. We didn't have anything that suggested wrongdoing. Okay, so you spent 3 years. You had all of the resources available to you to investigate this case fully, and you've come out and not cleared anything up. if you're going to spend 3 years investigating something, tell us, was the family correct? Was she murdered? Or was the military correct and this looks to be a suicide? You really can't discern that from all of the available information. Just going on the original autopsy, where the military neglected to mention much of the trauma to Lavina's body, the strange surgeries that were performed on her, that's not a problem. That's inconclusive to you. It's that whole, if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, right?
Yeah.
Why can't they just come out and say this to me? And I've heard this throughout the case. I've heard that media has been threatened by the military. I can't corroborate that. I can't say that's true, but it is strange that CBS would pay for an autopsy and then decide not to really run a story on this case. I mean, that's just really weird to me. They invested money in this. So where does this research group go with this? I mean, what was the point of investigating this case? Because they were asked to? This isn't satisfying for anyone. You know, the family was hoping that they would be able to get the Army to relook at this case. But you have the research group saying, yeah, we didn't find anything. Really? Because Justin and I just, you know, on our own time have found lots of problems with this. Yeah, when we've been working on getting this case ready to do an episode on, we found lots of problems with the investigation. And I don't understand. I think if Justin and I had all of this information, we could go step by step and say, here are the measurements. Here's why this doesn't make sense. Here's where the military can't be right. This is why you can't rule this a suicide. If they have surgically removed parts of Lavina and they don't explain why, that's a problem. What are you covering up? And why would you need to cover it up? I think I know the answer to that. And I don't think you need a 4-star general behind it to do this. We have seen in certain cultures where abuse, where rape, where terrible things happen because culturally they don't want you to investigate anything. They don't want you looking behind the curtain.
You're not entitled to it, like the general said.
How many women and men in the military are assaulted or raped? How many questionable suicides are there?
That's a good question. I think the going stat right now is 1 in 4 women will experience some form of sexual assault or rape. Of, I think it was 130 to 140 women that had died in Iraq, and there was like 19 of them that had taken their own lives. Now I'm wondering, like, I get that it's a stressful situation. Combat zones are not a friendly place to be, but is that suicide rate seriously correct? We want to send our children off to college. We want the best for them. But are you willing to send your daughter into the military to fund her college education if there's a 1 in 4 chance that she could be assaulted? I'm not. That's not a good ratio for me. Going with that, when I was researching this case, I came across another one of a woman named Hannah McKinney. She was at a guard post one night and they found her body in the middle of the road in the morning and she'd been run over. According to one of her sergeants, he had gone out there that night and given her some alcohol. They were intoxicated. They got in his Jeep or Humvee, had sex. Then she got out and he drove off. And he remembers a thump, and that must have been him running over her body and not realizing it. Now, this guy, this sergeant, he didn't even get manslaughter charges. He got, like, you know, accident with equipment or something to that effect for literally having sex on duty, on post, and then running over the female soldier. But did they look at this as, oh, well, did he attack her and then kill her? No, this was an accident. They took his word for it. That's insanity to me. And the fact that he is still in the military to this day, and he wasn't charged with, I mean, I think he was fined like a month's worth of pay. That's the kind of value they put on their female soldiers. A month of pay? I think we should treat our soldiers better. And when it comes to our female soldiers, they're the ones that are enrolling and they're the ones that want to be in the military fighting on the front lines, but I've spoken to a lot of female soldiers, and I have yet to find very many positive stories or experiences from them. I had a whole episode on my Peripheral podcast, episode 21, called Why We Don't Report Rape, where my first guest talks about how she was assaulted on base in the States, not even in a combat zone. And when she reported it, it came back on her, and she was disciplined. She was retaliated against. And her attacker, well, eventually he was transferred to another base, and she was pretty much kicked out or forced out of the military. I'm not saying that anecdotal evidence proves anything, but everything you read about females in the military is typically negative. I'm looking for a positive here.
Well, I recall back when we did our rape culture episode, in preparation for that, we watched a documentary titled The Invisible War that deals just with this. And this isn't unique to the military. It's unique to any enclosed culture that is sort of outside of the normal jurisdiction, right? So if you have a gym and there is a rape there and someone chooses to report it, it gets reported to the police. But when it comes to, say, the Catholic Church or the U.S. military, it's as though they get to police themselves. And when you say that, police yourself, how well will you police yourself? Because now it's not a criminal investigation, it's an inconvenience. And that's just putting it mildly, because if you are policing yourself at the other end of this, there could be true malice. There could be complete disdain for the victim.
I think when you look at this, the suicide theory, as much as it is plausible, it's just not reasonable. And foul play or homicide is far more likely. Now, we had a really hard time getting a hold of a lot of information for this case. We reached out to both parties and didn't get a lot back. I think if we had access, we would have a lot more information and we could have been a lot more conclusive here.
And I think what's most disappointing about reading on rape in the military is that all of us as Americans feel a certain sense of pride in our military. We understand that there are people who give up good portions of their lives to go and serve their country. And if you want to know what the emotional impact of that is, just watch these videos of men and women coming home after deployment, being gone for a year, and then being greeted by their wives and their children or their husbands and their children and all the tears. This isn't something that's taken lightly. And so for people to be committing such heinous criminal acts in the military and nothing really being done about it, it's very disconcerting. For me, when I try to figure out what really happened to this young woman, I don't know what happened to her. Again, I can look at what happened to her face and think, yeah, those gases coming out of the end of an M16 could do that to her. But there are so many problems around that, where the rifle was actually found, the blood outside the tent, evidence that she was dragged. There are things here that cannot be explained away. And I'm just not comfortable saying, yeah, the military is probably correct. I wish that the investigative group, I wish they had come out and said, you know what? We've seen enough here. The military absolutely should reopen. I don't care if they have no right to say so. I don't care if the military just doesn't pay any attention. Someone needed to say it. They were in the best position. They had all the evidence they needed. And in the end, they just said inconclusive.
But they do say that they didn't find anything questionable to go back to the military with. Well, show us that. Show us how it's not questionable. Explain how this went down.
I would love to see that.
We just talked for almost an hour, and we didn't do this for 3 years.
Really, the true cost of this, when we talk about rapes, whether they're reported or not, these terrible situations that recruits find themselves in, that veterans find themselves in, there are mysterious deaths, and the military doesn't seem to cooperate. It just enforces this idea that these people, meaning our men and women that enlist in the military, aren't important. They're not people. They're numbers. And I think that's the wrong way to go about this. I understand as a military, they need to strip you from some of yourself to become a unit. I understand that. But there's a point at which we need to go beyond that to respect the individual. And in a case where a woman has died under very mysterious circumstances and many people suspect foul play, that's the time we need to stop looking at someone as a number and look at them as a person. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.